This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9, proudly sponsored by Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Across Melbourne on Joy 94.9 and streaming online at joy.org.au, you're listening to Saturday Magazine, every Saturday 10 till 12.
During the week, there was a very interesting news piece. First, I read about it in The Age, and it was all about girls winning the right to wear shorts and trousers to all Victorian state schools. I mean, do you believe it, Macca?
I actually didn't realise that they didn't have that.
Well, neither did I. I had no idea either.
That I would have thought. I mean, we've seen a lot of nonsense about some of the No campaign saying that, you know.
Yeah, boys will wear dresses to school and all that sort of stuff.
But I actually didn't realise that. What this has done is it's actually given the right for girls to wear shorts and trousers, and there are good practical reasons.
Oh, of course there are.
Catherine Dixon, who's the Executive Director, Victorian Equal Opportunity and Human Rights Commission. Good morning, Catherine.
Hi, Macca. How are you?
Good, good. And welcome to Saturday Magazine. Great to have you here. Some of the practical reasons why girls should be allowed to wear shorts and trousers. Some research shows girls do less exercise when wearing a school dress. And interestingly, that one of the things it says here, students become self-conscious about accidentally exposing themselves, you know, that when you're doing exercise or whatever, you know, that it might flash their underwear. I mean, these are good practical reasons, aren't they?
Yeah, that's right, Macca, and I think it's just ensuring that schools are brought into the modern world, really. And I think these changes, which are changes that the Minister for Education has committed to, really just ensure that girls have more freedom to, you know, run around and do what they want to do in terms of playing and doing sport and playing on the monkey bars and not worrying about their skirts or dresses flying into their faces and things like that. And it just makes sense, really. It's a common sense measure, I think.
So, okay. Catherine, I mean, when we say that the girls have won the right to wear shorts and trousers, are we saying that girls initially didn't have the right to wear shorts and trousers to school? And secondly, how is this right won? Like, who decides what a kid can wear to school?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it's been framed as a rights issue because it can give rise to a discrimination issue under the Equal Opportunity Act, school uniform policies, when you've got blanket policies that may mean that kids are excluded or treated less favourably because of a particular attribute, and it could be race, religion, it could be because of their gender identity, sexual preference. There's a whole range of, as you know, potential personal characteristics where school uniform policies can give rise to exclusion, less favourable treatment. So I guess with girls not being able to have the same freedoms as boys, it did raise a potential discrimination issue. But there's a fair bit of freedom that schools are given, I suppose within the confines of the law, but also government policy. There's a fair bit of freedom for schools to be able to dictate, you know, school uniform codes and rules and policies. And
so I would have thought that a school council, who's the governing authority for a school, can decide what the school uniform is going to be for a particular school.
Yeah, they can, as long as it's within boundaries and doesn't, you know, either directly or indirectly.
So shorts and trousers been out of the boundaries for girls?
I think it has depended on the school, and right. I think there's been, you know,
in 2017.
Yes,
I find that really bizarre.
Well, I know. Look, the school that my son goes to has an optional uniform policy, for example. So that's a fair bit of freedom there. But
right.
There are other schools that, you know, that there's a whole set of reasons why they might have a school uniform policy. Things around sense of identity and cohesion, and often it is about making sure students feel equal. But of course, it doesn't always work that way.
Mm. I'd like to just take this another step and move into the area of, say, headgear. And so a student who might, for particular cultural or religious or faith reasons, choose to wear some sort of head garment, whether it be a skull cap or a scarf or one of those stockings that, you know, some of those Sikh children wear. Where does this fit into all of that framework?
Well, that's a really interesting one, Tass. If a student wanted to wear headgear for religious reasons, that would be different to, say, wanting to wear a cap that may offend the school uniform policy, for example. So in that situation, a student for religious reasons who wants to wear, for example, a child's turban, and I'll give this example in a minute, would have, you know, rights under the Equal Opportunity Act to seek to do that, and it would be up to the school to really justify why it is that child can't wear that turban and express himself or herself in that way. So I'll give you an example. The Commission has a function to intervene in court cases to make sure the law's developing in the way mm-hmm. that it was intended. And there was a case recently of a parent who brought a discrimination case on behalf of a five-year-old Sikh boy against Melton Christian College, and that was because he wanted to wear what's called a patka, which is a child's turban, and the boy was saying that the college wouldn't let him enrol in the school if it meant that he was going to wear the patka. So that raised an issue of discrimination on the grounds of his religious beliefs and activity.
Of course.
And the school relied on the exceptions in the Equal Opportunity Act to say, well, we're able to set reasonable standards of dress. And the jury's out yet about how the tribunal is going to look at the scope of those exceptions. Because one of the things the school has to do if they want to rely on exceptions to discrimination is to consult properly with their whole school community.
Community, yeah.
So right. It's really about setting the standards of dress that the community as a whole, and that includes people of, you know, different religious minorities, for example, within that community, think is okay and acceptable.
I think one of the challenges here, and that's a really good example. The school will probably say, "Look, we're a Christian school, and you know, I can already imagine what they're going to be saying. We're a Christian school, and we respect the right of other religions, but that's not acceptable in the school context. But the fact that they're going to have to consult with the school community and to be able to demonstrate that they've consulted and that they've done it widely." They might actually be surprised with the outcome of what they may not be, but they could well be surprised by the outcome of that.
I think that's right, Macca, because in that case, interestingly, at least 50% of their student population are actually non-Christians.
It's an interesting area. We're going to quickly go to a break. Then when we come back, we'll just finish off on this, but also we'd like to talk about marriage equality and the work of the Victorian Equal Opportunity and Human Rights Commission, because it's hugely important work, and there's a long history to it, and there's still a lot of work to go. We've been having a discussion with Catherine Dixon, Executive Director, Victorian Equal Opportunity and Human Rights Commission. Got that right this time. And we were talking about the Victorian government is going to ensure that if girls want to wear shorts and trousers to Victorian state schools, they can. Might seem a bit of a non-question, and you're probably like me wondering why they couldn't. But apparently it was an issue in some schools. So, but following on from that, you had a question, Tess, or a...
Yeah, so the flip side of this is if girls can wear shorts and trousers, what if a boy chooses to wear a dress? And what are their rights, responsibilities and obligations around that, both in terms of the individual student and also the school, especially in this sort of diversity framework that we're all encouraging?
Yeah, I think that's right. And it really does come down to you know, the individual circumstances and the reasons behind why, you know, kids want to go outside of, you know, potentially what the school uniform policy is. As I was saying before, you know, there may be reasons, for example, trans kids that might be questioning their gender identity, for example, you know, which means that a kid wants to wear a dress. I know in the UK, all of the state schools there have adopted a gender-neutral uniform policy for that reason, just to be more sensitive to kids who are questioning gender identity and don't want to feel constrained by, you know, these stereotypes of what kids have to wear
so
and
is a
don't have to wear.
What does that look like? Is that trousers and...
I think it means girls can, you know, wear trousers and shorts and boys can wear dresses or skirts. And
right.
I think it's about just giving that freedom and relaxation to do it. And as I said, some schools don't even have a uniform policy. So it does vary and it is about trying to create a policy whereby kids feel included and, you know, free to be themselves within the boundaries of what it means to be at school and to have a school identity and pride and cohesion at the school.
And Catherine, I'm not going to advocate this, but should a male student choose a male identifying student choose to wear a skirt to school? Is that an issue? I mean, not a trans kid; it's just a male kid.
Yeah, sure. Well, I think it would. It wouldn't be an issue for me, for example,
yeah.
But I think it would depend on the school community. And as I said, if the school have a policy on that and they've gone about the process of properly consulting with the school, you know, then it might be that the school can rely on one of the exceptions in the Equal Opportunity Act to say, well, look, this kid's not being treated less favourably, this kid's included, and these are the reasons why we have these particular standards of dress, and the school community support that. So that's, you know, that's possible within the Equal Opportunity Act.
There's a mushroom cloud over South Bank. Andrew Bolt has just exploded.
Yes.
Andrew Bolt. He probably...
This will be all deemed political correctness.
Yes, he does actually... listen in occasionally, I think, when he wants to get agitated. I'm interested as well, the Commission has made a statement on marriage equality, and I'd like you to quickly run us through that.
Yeah, sure, Macca. So at the Victorian Equal Opportunity and Human Rights Commission, we obviously are advocates for equality and human rights, and so we've come out quite strongly in support of same-sex marriage because we think that the current Marriage Act is discriminatory and it does exclude same-sex couples from having their relationships valued in an equal way to heterosexual couples. And so we've come out quite strongly in support of marriage equality and of the yes vote.
Great. It's I'm feeling really left out because I've been overseas for a week. And I got back and I fully expected my survey to be in the post and I haven't got it yet.
No, neither have I, actually.
I think it's a conspiracy.
I think it's got something to do with where you live.
Yes, probably
does. Because I happen to live in the federal electorate...
Of Melbourne Ports.
Melbourne Ports, which, along with the federal electorate of Sydney, has the highest concentration of yes voters, according to the ABS Vote Compass survey.
Yes.
It was conducted at the last federal election.
And I'm in Maribyrnong. I mean, Bill Shorten's seat.
Yeah, but that's not...
No.
You know, 79% is the percentage in
yes,
my seat.
I know.
We should move you somewhere else, Taz.
Yeah, yeah.
where you're more needed.
Yeah, move you into a... You know, we want you to be in a more...
Well, it's interesting. I walk around my neighbourhood and there's no flags anywhere. There's not too many yes signs. You walk into places like... I was in Fitzroy the other day and there are yes signs everywhere. Mm. Richmond, there are yes signs everywhere. Yep. Hardly any around my neighbourhood. And I think it's because people are just saying...
It's taken for granted.
It's not a big deal. Mm. This is not an issue. It's a non-issue, in fact.
I want to ask you a slightly curly one here, Catherine.
Oh, dear. Thanks, Maker. It's a bit early on a Saturday.
It is. But it's all right. It's not a dangerous one.
And Catherine is a bureaucrat, so be careful.
No, yes, I know. I'm not a bureaucrat, actually.
I
should clarify that the Commission is an independent
yes.
organisation. So,
yeah.
So I'm not a bureaucrat.
Not a bureaucrat.
No.
There you go.
I'd challenge that.
Oh.
Okay.
Oh, he's an ex-chief of staff.
I suppose I am covered under you know, the Public Administration Act.
Yes, you are.
Yes.
Including its code of conduct.
Yes.
Employment conditions.
Yes.
And it goes on and on.
But that doesn't mean that we don't have an independent voice.
I understand that.
TASS is an ex-chief of staff, and, of course, chiefs of staff of ministers, they think everyone should do what they tell them. what I'm interested in is that the whole concept of the postal survey, and, okay, it was challenged in the High Court, and the court found, or as Malcolm would say, and the court will so hold, but the court didn't agree with the objections. One of the concerns I have with going down this path is I see it as a little bit of opening the gate to citizen-initiated referenda. If this survey gets a good response rate, bearing in mind it's not compulsory, if it gets a good response rate, I think we're going to see arguments being made for this to happen again with other issues. What's your thought on that?
Well, it's a really good point, Macca. The Commission didn't support the postal vote initially, whilst we support same-sex marriage, because we didn't think that rights issues should be determined in this way, and that really it's up to our leaders to show leadership on this issue and protect rights because we all have them. In the absence of that, now we are having a postal vote. We're 100% behind the yes vote. But I agree with you. I think it is potentially problematic to be deciding issues in this way, because as you've seen as well, it does give rise sometimes to a debate that, whilst we're all in favour of freedom of expression, can also descend into some pretty hateful statements and make people in the LGBTI community particularly feel very vulnerable. And, you know, that's really to be avoided, I think.
I think one of the challenges is that if, as I said, if it's a good outcome in terms of turnout, and I would classify that as 60% or more in terms of ballots and surveys returned, I already can hear some of the static on the sidelines, people saying, well, this is a good way for government, you know, to gain an insight into people's thoughts to help them form legislation. And I, whilst in principle that sounds fine, citizen-initiated referenda and where the public is asked to vote on contentious issues because the Parliament has abrogated the responsibility to do so, I see that as being very dangerous, because it could become, depending on when you do it, populist causes, and people can decide a vote on the basis of something that happened in the last 2 weeks rather than what they want to see happen in the future.
Well, I think there's two issues on that. I think it is good practice in any legislative reform or development to consult with the community and engage with the community and make sure that it's a very well-informed engagement. This is different, I think, situation. And I guess one of the concerns about the current situation is that it won't inevitably lead to law reform. It's still going to be up to Parliament to work out how to go about enshrining marriage equality in the Marriage Act. So I suppose that's another one of the concerns about it, that it doesn't necessarily lead to a result.
It's not ideal.
Catherine, the question, the way in which the question's been framed focuses on same-sex couples. It's actually silent on our bisexual, our transgender and our intersex and our non-binary family members. How is this going to resolve itself? Because, you know, as an LGBTI rights activist, I'm interested in equality for all of us, not just for people who identify as same-sex.
Yeah, it's a really good point. And I think if they ultimately end up amending the Marriage Act to talk about the definition of marriage as that of two people, then it will remove those legal obstacles.
But that's not what the question asks.
No, it doesn't. I agree with you.
I think that's a real problem, and I think it's a sleeper. And I'm not sure why our trans activists haven't actually come out and made some statements about this.
It's possible that it's one step at a time, and if we get, you know, a consensus around same-sex marriage, and then if it leads to then an amendment that just talks about two people, so it's in gender-neutral terms, then in fact it will have the added benefit of being inclusive to everyone.
And that's all we need to do,
that's
is to
right.
just drop the man and woman
exactly.
out of the act, and it's pretty simple, isn't it?
I think so.
Yeah.
And we need to include the bridge over the Derwent, because Senator Egra Betts would like to marry that bridge in Tasmania. I think that would suit him quite fine.
Catherine, thank you very much for coming into the studio.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Maybe we should do this again at some point.
Yeah.
You know, it's great to have a legal perspective and to have a rights perspective as well. Thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule this morning.
I'm not too busy ever to come on, so
fantastic.
Yeah, I would love to.
Thank you.
Okay,
thanks for your work. It's very, very important work what the Commission does.
Thanks, Macca.
It represents all of us and it protects all of us, regardless of our view.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.